Hey everyone, don't let the title of this episode scare you off. Chad Daniels and I don't end up talking about that many poems. However, if you did come here just for the poems, Chad Daniels and I talked about some very important poems. And this is The Book Pile, a podcast about the best of books and the worst of books. If this is your first time to the podcast, welcome, and maybe suggest checking out our back catalog of 180 episodes with just as many books and counting, including two previous episodes with today's guest, Chad Daniels, who also joined me and Dave when we discussed The Old Man and the Sea, and then later, Goodnight Moon. And I'm very sorry, Dave was supposed to make it for this episode, not a joke, but he had a professional emergency come up very last minute and he wasn't able to join us. And you'll see how Chad and I treat Dave's phantom presence with great respect. All right, let's get right into it. And remember, if you want to support the podcast and get bonus content, consider joining our Patreon. Last week's mini episode includes a cut portion of today's conversation with Chad Daniels. Go to patreon.com/thebookpile. And speaking of Chad Daniels, he is my favorite comedian. I will always consider myself extremely lucky to know him. And lucky that he's willing to do our podcast. He has recorded several hour specials. He's got over 1 billion streams on Pandora, and he recently shot his first Netflix special, which we'll discuss on this episode. And speaking of that, as usual, with comics, talking to comics, we do go off on a few tangents here. But even if you just came for the poetry, I think you'll still enjoy listening to Chad. He's one of the greatest storytellers of our time. So now, without further ado, this is me and Chad Daniels. Dave couldn't be here. He really wanted to be. I mean, especially since he's read a lot more poetry than me. And I know he has like lists of great poems that he loves, but sure. he had like a legit issue with a business of his this morning, so he couldn't make it. But oh, I still sucks. I think we should act like he's not here just because he doesn't understand poems. So today, Chad, when I messaged you a couple months ago about books, you said, could we do a poem, which I thought was really neat. And again, Dave was very excited at first, but then he was like, I don't get poetry. And so,
yeah, I don't understand the nuance of poetry. Last time he was here, we did Goodnight Moon. Is there any way we could do another children's book? That seems more his speed.
Even then, he had questions about the kittens and the mittens.
Yeah, he didn't like that part because why is this rhyming? What is this, a poem? Ugh.
So I'm very excited for you to get into yours and how it affected you. I have one, and then I have some from our Patreon subscribers that we can.
Oh, cool!
Either celebrate or make fun of.
Absolutely. Well, that's great. So this is my third time being on. I'm going to brag. I'm the first three-timer.
Yes.
Yeah. So I'm very excited about that. We did Old Man and the Sea, which I read every year, and then we did Goodnight Moon. And now I asked if I could do a poem just because I've only read those two books. So I was nervous. I was going to have to read a whole book. I'm like, but anyways, this is Stopping by Woods on a Snowy Evening by Robert Frost. Do you want me to read it?
Please do.
Okay. Whose woods are these? Excuse me. Whose woods these are? There we go. I have read this before, I promise. I think I know. His house is in the village, though. He will not see me stopping here to watch his woods fill up with snow. My little horse must think it queer to stop without a farmhouse near, between the woods and frozen lake, the darkest evening of the year. He gives his harness bells a shake to ask if there is some mistake. The only other sounds the sweep of easy wind and downy flake. The woods are lovely, dark, and deep, but I have promises to keep and miles to go before I sleep and miles to go before I sleep. That's it. We can edit those mistakes out of there. That'd be fantastic. Now, number one, I love this poem because you can read it in Bane's voice from Dark Knight Rises. And it really seems extra scary. Whose woods are these? I think I know. His house is in the village, though. He will not see me stopping here to watch his woods fill up with snow. I do know that that's not a very good impersonation, but I have read this to my children in that voice, and they thought it was pretty cool because they had never seen the movie, and so I told them it was perfect. Yeah.
Yeah, with zero reference point, it's easy to be dead on.
Absolutely, yeah. Now, my kids, they knew voices for sure, because I was listening to Eddie Murphy's Delirious one night. It came up, and I just started watching it, and it was just clips. And then my daughter came out of her room, and she's very little, and she goes, why is Donkey swearing? And I thought, how interesting is that, that if you only know Eddie Murphy's voice from Shrek,
yes,
it has to be so weird where it's like, isn't this the guy that talked about parfaits also having layers and now he's cursing? I don't need that.
Yeah, it's so funny to have the wherever you end up on the timeline, because to me, Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, my favorite Indiana Jones movie, and that's how I know Sean Connery. So then much later in
life,
when I watched James Bond, he's a super young Indiana Jones's dad, and then on the other side of that, I had a similar experience with my kid. He was watching Star Wars for the first time, and he said he saw Han Solo, and he said, that's the guy from Call of the Wild.
Oh, wow.
Which Harrison Ford did like 3 years ago.
Yeah.
Old man, huge beard. And absolutely, to my son, Han Solo is the guy from The Other Thing. I learned recently that Shrek was originally supposed to be Kevin Farley. And I just think how much even funnier I think it would have been.
Kevin Farley, like Chris Farley's brother?
Oh, I'm sorry. You know, Jim Belushi, the funniest of the Belushis. Of course, Chris Farley.
Oh, interesting. I didn't know that.
Chris Farley. Yeah. And it just seems to me, the Shrek was a bit off-putting at first, but Chris Farley just would have been just big and fun the whole time. You know?
Oh, interesting to think about. Absolutely.
The filmmakers weren't planning on Shrek speaking with a Scottish accent at all, and they were unsure about it because it was a choice on Mike Myers' part that he said he decided on because to him, Shrek would have been a peasant. He would have been looked down on, as historically Scottish people were for far too long. And that's where his choice for that voice came from. So he got really into the psychosis of Shrek, of trolls.
Yeah, you don't really think the guy that did Wayne's World would get too into, you know, the nuances of a voiceover. But it worked. I thought it was great.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. It turned out great. It's just funny to think what it could have been.
Yeah.
If it weren't for cocaine.
That gets me back into the poem, actually, this talk of cocaine, is that I didn't know what this meant. So I kind of think, I talked about this with Old Man and the Sea. It is, every year I read it, I'm in a different part of my life. I'm in not necessarily a different phase, but I'm in a different mood. Different things have just happened to me. So I read it differently. And I think that's what happened in this poem. I read this poem in the midst of some addiction in my family. And so when I read this poem to me, I have read things since that say it's about death, or it literally is just Robert Frost writing about the outdoors. Mm. But when I read this poem initially, I read it in school. And I think it is very much the mind of an addict. Mm. If you read through each stanza, you can kind of see how an addict would be thinking. Darkest evening of the year, he gives his harness bells a shake. You know, that's kind of an addict has a couple days without a couple days of sobriety, right? A little like wake up call. Maybe there was a car accident. Something like that gives the harness bells a shake. And then, of course, these woods are lovely, dark, and deep, right? I think an addict really they feel comfortable in that space because they've lived there for so long. But then they kind of wake up, I have promises to keep and miles to go before I sleep. But that's how I had taken it, only because we read this in school, but didn't dissect it. We just kind of were going through American poetry.
And that's wild to me, too, that, like, especially in high school, that we're having kids study things with essentially zero life experience at that point. So that's why right. So many things I think would be boring, were boring to me because I had nothing to reference, nothing. Because, and to me, that's what I love about poetry, like good poetry, mm-hmm. is that like there is no right or wrong. It's whatever you can interpret.
Right. The eye of the beholder type of deal.
Yeah. Because I see that dilemma there that you're talking about, because I take that, especially that last line there, of sort of the dilemma, the struggle of what's alluring versus what I just doing what I know I need to do because it's right, but how exhausting that is. Like the woods are lovely, dark and deep, but he catches himself. But I have promises to keep.
Yep.
And then just the exhaustion of and miles to go before I sleep. And then he just says it again. And miles to go.
Yeah, it gets a little terrifying at the end. Who knows? Maybe that's when the needle went in the arm after the second one. He's like, and miles to go before I sleep? It's miles? I think there's, you know, even like the, he will not see me stopping here to watch his woods fill up with snow. There's that kind of, should I sit here? No one's going to know I'm doing this. Can I sit here and get away with it, or do I need to keep on keeping on? I didn't mean to bring the entire thing down with addiction talk. However, I do think, you know, it was just the perfect timing for me. Like you said, when you don't have a lot of life experiences, you probably put the biggest one or the most meaningful one into a poem. It's not like I would read this and go, oh, this guy was probably doing cross country. Right? I mean, you're a sophomore in high school. You're like, oh, this is about a football game, I'm sure.
Cut to a quarterback in the locker room. Listen, guys, at halftime, but we have promises to keep and yards to go before we sleep. And yards to go.
And then the custodian walks in. Did somebody say sweep? It's only halftime.
So then you got older, you read the snow part, and you're like, cocaine, of course.
No, I knew about cocaine because one time I heard my mom tell her friend that my dad put two cars and a house up his nose, and I'm like, does my dad know magic? Is my dad Harry Potter? How is he doing this? And then we learned about that.
And again, loving the sort of infinite layers that poetry has, depending on where you are and who you are in life, compared to a book like Harry Potter, where you would never, like, you read it and you're done, right? There's no rereading Harry Potter going, right. Oh, the way he's talking to that snake, I think we are the snake, you know?
Yeah. You're like, well, I'm going through some stuff this year and I feel like a snake and I'm going to start elongating my S's to see how that works in public. I'm trying to get custody of my kids. Maybe stay away from that strategy in court. Oh my
God. Your Honor, I am a parcel mouth. I deserve at least 60-40.
And if you don't believe me, expecto patronum.
You get 5 to 10 for yelling Aveda Cadavra at the jury. I have, before I get into my poem, I want to see if you can guess this poem and this poet.
Okay.
Quote, don't want to be your monkey wrench, one more indecent accident.
I have it. The poem is indeed Monkey Wrench. You gave it away. And the poet, of course, is David Grohl.
As with a lot of Foo Fighters songs growing up, the next lines in the chorus are like, I'd rather leave than suffer this.
Right.
For $1 million, I would have bet you that it was, I'd rather be the second best. Because it's one of those things that not only does it sound similar, it also makes just as much sense when you're listening to the song.
Yep.
I'd rather be the second best. There's self-sacrifice in there. Didn't even say it.
Yeah, the Foo Fighters, I saw them in Wrigley Field once. It was Whoa. When Dave Grohl had a broken leg and he was on that throne. So he had a throne that would bring him out a catwalk into the crowd instead of walking up. And so he's playing his stuff and it was raining for a while. So they had to leave the stage and, you know, people were like, we don't know if they're going to come back. So they came back and it was maybe like 11:30 or something when they came back. But there was in Wrigleyville, there is a noise ordinance at midnight and they're playing a song. And he goes, this has to be the last song. And everyone's kind of like groaning a little bit, but we understand because it was raining. And then he goes, the reason this is the last song is there's a noise ordinance here in Wrigleyville. And if you break it, it's $250,000. And I'm just so sorry that, you know, that this has to be the last song. And then he starts playing it, stops, goes back on his throne towards the band. The band converges around him. They go back to their spots. The throne comes back out and he goes, oh, I guess we just found 250 grand. Ba-na-na-na-na, and started playing again for another hour.
That's amazing.
It is my favorite concert memory of all time.
That's incredible. And that it meant that much to Dave to go on with the show.
Yeah.
That's wonderful. Mm-hmm. I just listened to his autobiography, The Storyteller.
Yeah.
Which I recommend as the third book that you ever read.
Well, I hate to say this. I was teasing before. I have read it.
Okay.
And I think it's fantastic. Right? Yeah.
So I love that story and how neat that you were there. It sounds like not long after it happened, the story of how he fell off stage 12 feet onto concrete.
Yeah.
And then that night essentially had a doctor hold his bones in place while he finished the show from a
It's
chair.
So crazy.
But that show must go on. One time I was opening for Norm MacDonald.
Nice.
And right as the middle act, the comic before Norm, right as he has maybe 3 minutes left, Norm jogs up to me backstage and he says, you know, because I'm hosting, he says, hey, could you do some more time before you bring me up? I got to take a dump.
Amazing.
And then which was hilarious to me, but then you also can't explain to the audience what's happening. So now it just looks like I am the most self-indulgent host to get up there and be like, so I was talking about grocery carts half an hour ago, and I remembered. So I have a couple of poems that I'd like to read. The first one, one that affected me and again has affected me differently as I have aged very literally is Because I Could Not Stop for Death by Emily Dickinson. So just a couple of lines from this. She says, because I could not stop for death, he kindly stopped for me. The carriage held but just ourselves and immortality. We slowly drove, he knew no haste, and I had put away my labor and my leisure too for his civility. We passed the schoolyard where children played, their lessons scarcely done. We passed the fields of gazing grain, we passed the setting sun. We paused before a house that seemed a swelling of the ground. And you get the idea. And it hits differently now for me because when I first read it, it just seemed like a sobering glance at what it must be like to be near death. It's stuff you always hear of like your life flashing before your eyes or replaying your whole life. But as I get older and just, you know, a little closer to the finish line, it feels less like this life flashing before my eyes, that it's less for those on the doorstep because like as I get older, I just do this like often, you know, go back and think about my entire life, you know, so that now when I hear people like in movies who are like, my life flashed before my eyes, I'm like, three times this week already.
Yeah, you're like, and it didn't flash. I play it in real time. I play it in real time back.
It's like as slow as a Scorsese film when I get into it. Yeah. Just reflecting and hanging on maybe too much. So I looked into it. Dickinson, she died at 55, but she wrote, you would think that she wrote this poem like the day before. She wrote it when she was 32. And that... That tracks too, because I probably started reflecting on all of that the day of my 29th birthday. That was like, might have been the hardest birthday I've had so far, was 29, because that's the moment when I realized, oh, I'm not going to be in my 20s forever. That's like when it really hit me.
Sure.
Like, I should probably start taking some things more seriously. So that's mine. That's another poem that.
That's an incredible poem.
That sounds differently, but I guess I could also hear it as Bane, because I couldn't stop for death.
I mean, when you, Emily must have been a real partier.
By the way, I was going to bring up earlier with Robert Frost, isn't it? Interesting that a guy like that who wrote poems about going into the cold woods and snowy evenings and his name is Frost. Like, it doesn't seem real, right? It's like, or Wordsworth, you know, becomes
right.
A poet, you know.
That's almost like a DJ that changes their name to sound like yes. Exactly like, you know, ladies and gentlemen, put your hands together for DJ Spins Records. Like, okay, Mr. Frost, let me guess what this poem is going to be about.
Speaking of which, here's another favorite of mine is by Oscar Wilde.
Okay.
This is the end of his, a poem of his called Magdalene Walks. He says, see the lark starts up from his bed in the meadow there, breaking the gossamer threads and the nets of dew, and flashing adown the river a flame of blue. The kingfisher flies like an arrow and wounds the air. I love that. I love these. I used to hate poems that didn't rhyme when I was younger and just didn't understand because it seemed like it was cheating. But then I... I went back to school. I've dropped out of college twice, fun fact. But I took a poetry class that actually affected even my joke writing, where we got into modern poetry. And, like, don't get me wrong, there's still way, way more bad poetry than good poetry. Like, I
agree.
But learning about that beyond, like, sticking to a meter, there's also just imagery in poetry and, like, the difference between concrete versus abstract, mm-hmm. you know, and I think in comedy, it's like I said, it's affected me and I see it in yours so much that it's so much funnier to say an example of something that happened rather than just describing it with a fun adjective, you know, like Wilde could have said, and the kingfisher flew so fast.
You guys aren't going to believe this.
It just ends with an exclamation mark. That's the end of the poem. But to say he wounds the air is such like a visceral, almost a violent image.
And I think with that, obviously the air cannot be wounded. But when you hear that phrasing, you can shut your eyes. And I bet you 90 out of 100 people, or 9 out of 10, I could have said, same fraction. 9 out of 10 people would describe the flight the same way.
Yes.
Yeah, I love it because everything about what you read from him, I can see it. I can shut my eyes and I can see the scene. I can see everything that's happening. I can see the takeoff and I can see the exact flight of this kingfisher. That's
100%.
It's incredible.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, it's just wonderful. Yeah. So you're saying 9 out of 10. So in... The 1 out of 10 being Dave Vance.
Dave Vance or that dentist that never approves the gum. You ever seen that guy? He's just a holdout for some. He's started his own gum company or toothpaste company or something.
I wanted to ask you if you can talk about it. So first of all, the last time I saw you in person was just barely a year ago when you shot 2 comedy specials in one night.
Yeah, that's right, in Madison.
And then, but then just recently, you shot your first Netflix special.
Yeah.
How did that go?
It was really fun. It was, instead of doing two separate hours in one night. We decided to shoot the same show twice in one night so we would have options for editing, because I didn't leave myself any room to mess up the last time. And I'm a mess up guy. That's kind of my thing, my MO. So I've lived in Minnesota my whole life. It was in the capital city, St. Paul, at a beautiful venue that's owned by the First Avenue conglomerate, which was Prince's big music place. There's just, it felt very Minnesota to me. And, you know, the show's sold out and it just felt great. It happened to be my birthday. And so something that was neat was, you know, after the shows, I was saying thank you to everybody. And same thing happened both shows. One person yelled happy birthday, and then the whole crowd started singing happy birthday, which is pretty insane. And I have those videos and stuff. So it was just, you know, pretty near and dear to me, this one, because it was my 10th hour. And so everything just kind of came together in a very kind of cool way for me. And it was a blast. Absolutely.
That's
blast.
Wild.
Yeah.
When I've shot, I've done both as well. I guess when I did specials in one take, though, it was just 30 minutes. But even then, with those half hours, I remember the one I did for Epics. It's a special no one saw, luckily. It was during COVID.
Yeah. Kelsey was on the first episode of that too, I think.
Yeah. I talked to Kelsey about it because we both did it and had such a bizarre experience, because it was like, it was outside and they had each table was like individually mic'd because there could only be two people and each table was 9 feet apart and you had to have been related to the person or whatever, you know, all these.
That's like figuring out when Easter is. You're just like, well, it's the first Sunday after the first full moon after the spring equinox. You're like, hey man, too many rules. Too many variables here. Please stop.
And the acoustics weren't even there because it was outside. And you know that outside shows in general, unless there's 8,000 people, the laughter just sort of dissipates into the clouds, you know?
Absolutely.
And also on that, I got in a spray tan that day. And if you've ever gotten one before, you don't need one. Spray tans, they like, when you first get them, your skin gradually gets darker over the course of like 8 hours. But I got my spray tan. I got it at like 2 o'clock, and then I'm shooting my special at 5. But there were parts of it that I was unhappy with because it was just the one take. So I waited until they were done shooting everyone else's. Yep. And I asked the producers, can I go up? I have like 4 jokes I want to pick up. I want to redo. I've done comedy, you know, 6 times in the last 8 months. Can I please redo these jokes? And they let me do it. So right before I go up again, now it's like midnight. My tan has matured. The makeup lady goes up to do touch up on me. And she was confused because she had like the specific foundation for each comic was set up at the beginning of the night. And now mine doesn't match. And now she thinks she's made a mistake. And so I go up and we end up like, I couldn't even use those things because I was visibly darker. And how odd would that have been? Like the punchline of 3 different jokes. I'm just, it would have been problematic.
I love that so much. You have a spray tan. One of the things you hear most from comedians when they go, why is this club your favorite club? They go, oh, the low ceilings. And you're like, let's do one with no ceilings. Let's make sure that there's 2 people every whatever it is, 9 feet, you said. Also, I'm just going to be a ticking time bomb where I have a shelf life. Like, why is Kellen going long? Oh, his spray tan's in full effect, I guess.
All right. Well, now to finish things up, I'm going to read a handful of favorite poems from some of our wonderful followers on Patreon. And we'll start with Jenny Hahn, faithful Patreon subscriber. Her favorite is The Red Wheelbarrow by William Carlos Williams. She says she loves the simplicity in the image. And again, this is a great example to me of the same thing, of that concrete versus abstract. It's a real short poem. It just reads, so much depends upon a red wheelbarrow glazed with rain beside the white chickens. Mm. And I love that too. It's just, it's also fun because if you look it up, the way that each stanza is designed, it's so much depends in the new line upon. And then it's a new line, a red wheel barrow is underneath it, so that each line has like one word under it, and it almost looks like a series of little wheelbarrows.
Oh, interesting.
And so I was buying pumpkins last year with my kids.
Okay.
And all of the wheelbarrows in the lot had just two big wheels on them.
Right.
One on one side, one on the other side. And it just makes a billion times more sense. Like, why haven't they been like this the whole time? Why have we been balancing an hour's worth of work on one spindly wheel? You ever use a wheelbarrow? Like
with one wheel? Or? Yeah. Yeah, that is very interesting. But I suppose back in the day, they were like, well, we can have one wheelbarrow. We can have two wheelbarrows. You pick.
Yeah, that's true. By the way, I want to ask you real quick before we get to the next poem. That was one thing for me that I never got to do as a kid that I do now. And it's definitely just really me giving a gift to my 10-year-old self. Is buying giant pumpkins to carve faces into, because my parents either couldn't afford it or were frugal. I still don't know. But is there anything like that that you can think of off the top of your head that you're like, I never got this as a kid, so I'm going to do it now?
I have probably 30 pairs of Jordan 1 Lowe's. Yep. Nice. Yep, everybody on the old Saturday basketball team had them, and I came in with just my clippity-cloppities from Kmart, you know, same shoes I wore to church, same shoes I wore to school, same shoes I wore, you know, swimming in the river probably. And so when I finally was comfortable enough to do that, then I started going through all the all the old ones and be like, I like that yes. color and I like that color.
Yes.
I really wish it were big pumpkins because I don't wear them. It's a really silly thing. And now, you know, looking back now that I'm a little older, I wish that, you know, so sometimes I find a buddy who has a kid that isn't necessarily the most popular kid or something, and then give them three or four pairs of Nike shoes and just at least have him walk into the cafeteria with a little confidence and whatever.
Oh, that's neat.
And this guy could buy the shoes himself, but I already have them. It doesn't make sense for him to buy them.
Your shoe story, it makes me think that I should probably give some of my huge Lego sets away to some children.
Nobody's judging out loud. A lot of us judging silently.
All right, just a couple more poems before we have to let you go. Caitlin Gardner loves The Orange by Wendy Cope. She says that it celebrates the mundane things. Another short one, it says, at lunchtime, I bought a huge orange. The size of it made us all laugh. I peeled it and shared it with Robert and Dave. They got quarters, and I had a half. The rest of the day was quite easy. I did all the jobs on my list and enjoyed them and had some time over. I love you. I'm glad I exist.
Well, I think the last lines, it sounds like how you end a journal entry, right? Where it's like, something I did well, I completed all my tasks, I love you, and I'm glad you exist. I mean, and that I'm not even mocking it, because I do that kind of stuff when I write in my journal too. I'm like, hey man, don't forget, you're actually pretty cool. Anyways, catch you later. Like that kind of stuff.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, it is almost like the poem is self-affirmation. Yeah. I do think it's a bit of a fantasy too, because I've never finished all the jobs on my list.
Right.
But I guess that's what poetry can do, is take you to places you've never been.
And you're going to tell me her two friends didn't complain about getting a quarter when she had a half? Please. Right. Please.
She says the size of it made us all laugh. In the end, she was the only one laughing. This is from Angel Eve, another Emily Dickinson. And this nice. Poem is called A Word Is Dead. Wow, Emily, I'm sensing a theme. She said, real short one, a word is dead when it is said, some say. I say just begins to live that day.
Hmm.
Nah, I think they're all dead. All right, next poem. but thank you, Angel. Again, I'm a big fan of Emily Dickinson. And honestly, I agree with her that her words are alive because we are still talking about them. Christy Garlitz has an excerpt from Song of Myself by Eminem. Walt Whitman. I do like this. I remember reading this one as well. It goes, I believe a leaf of grass is no less than the journey work of the stars. Skipping ahead. And the tree toad is the chef d'oeuvre for the highest. And the running blackberry would adorn the parlors of heaven. And the narrowest hinge in my hand puts to scorn all machinery. And the cow crunching with depressed head surpasses any statue. That's pretty cool. The narrowest hinge in my hand puts to scorn all machinery. It's interesting. I think of that when I see those. You ever see those like blooper videos from those robots that Boston Tech is trying to make? And they just look so clumsy. But I know that like 11 PhDs are trying to make this thing and they still can't.
Right. Yeah, that is interesting because we are put together. I mean, this is like the finished product.
Yeah. And then I use it to, you know, drink too much Coke while I'm watching Dune 2. That's how I honor my temple. I appreciate your time. I was going to ask you what your best concert, your favorite concert is that you've been to, but I think you may have answered that, your best concert experience.
Well, the best concerts I've ever went to was the Taylor tribute at the Kia Forum. So the drummer for Foo Fighters passed away, and then they did one tribute in England and one in the States, and it was at the Kia Forum. And so I got to go there, and it was like, you know, people from every band. Pink went out and sang Barracuda with the guitarist for Heart, and she came out and sang some Queen with the surviving members of that band. And it really was absolutely incredible. And Dave's daughter came out and sang Alleluia at the beginning, and not a dry eye in the house, man. It was really something. So
that sounds amazing. I think that's what I want for my memorial service, is just all of that.
I'll see what I can do.
Thanks again so much. Oh, were you going to say something?
Nope. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it. Good to see you again.
Yeah. Thanks so much. And again, Dave is sorry that he wasn't smart enough to join us for this episode.
Well, I know that's not true. So please tell him hello for me. And next time when I become the first four-timer.